Hi, and welcome back to another segment of Sea Control, a podcast from the Centre of International Maritime Security. My name's Natalie Sambi, and I'm from the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, and I'll be bringing you the Asia-Pacific segment of Sea Control. So welcome. Just for a bit of background, the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, my institute, it's a think tank located in Canberra, all the way down in Australia. We're a non-partisan independent think tank, and we predominantly produce analysis and advice on Australian strategic and defence policy. You can read a lot of our reports online. They're available free for download on www.aspi.org.au, or you might like to check out our blog, The Strategist, which is available at www.aspistrategist.org.au. So today, we'll be talking a little bit about submarines. ASPI has just held its first international conference on submarines, and it's a bit of a hot topic at the moment in this country. As a bit of background, Australia, we currently have six Collins-class diesel submarines, and there's been a lot of controversy in previous years about whether or not they're actually operationally functional, whether they've had issues, whether we've actually had enough submariners to man them. The Collins-class submarines, as a bit of background, are a Swedish design, and they were built by the Australian Submarine Corporation. And they're meant to last out to about the 2020s, but at the moment, Australia is currently looking at its options. Are we going to go down the road of having a military or commercial off-the-shelf option, or are we actually going to build our own? And as a response to that, ASPI held this conference, the Submarine Choice, to look at where are we heading in the future. So we brought together Australian and international speakers, academics, researchers, policymakers, and military personnel to talk about these kinds of issues. And and that was held this week. What I'd like to do today is I have two guests. I have two ASPI colleagues. One is Rosalind Turner, who has been recently interested in unmanned underwater systems, and she'll be talking a little bit about her research. And my second guest will be Dr. Mark Thompson, our Senior Analyst for Defence Economics.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, please consider following up with last week's interview with Eric Prince, former CEO of Blackwater, discussing his new operations in Africa. Remember, this week's Next War theme is private military contractors. And after listening to Natalie and the folks at ASPI discuss submarines in Australia, we hope you'll come over and give us a read at www.cimsec.org. Thank you.
Hi, and welcome back for another installment of SimSec's Sea Control, a podcast on maritime security issues. Hi, I'm Natalie Sambi. I'm from the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, and we're pleased to bring you the Asia-Pacific segment of Sea Control. And today, we'll just talk a little bit about ASPI, first of all. Just to recap, ASPI is an independent, non-partisan think tank, and what we do is we produce advice and analysis on Australian strategic defence policy, and we're also based in Canberra. We're pleased to announce that we've just finished our major international conference, the Submarine Choice, which really looks at where in Australia is heading with its choice of submarine in future. If you're interested in reading or knowing a little bit more about what we've done this week, please go along and visit our blog, The Strategist, at www.aspistrategist.org.au, or follow the hashtag Subcon14 on Twitter. And my guest today actually is my colleague Rosalind Turner. She's actually another author on The Strategist as well. She's a research intern at ASPI. Welcome, Rosie.
Hi, Nat. Lovely to be here.
Oh, just to give our listeners just a bit of background about yourself, would you like just to tell us a little bit about, you know, what research interests you're working on here at ASPI?
So I've mainly been working on new defence technology and capabilities, and I've particularly been looking at unmanned platforms in their various forms. So I've recently done stuff on the UCAV, U-class debate with the future drones in the US, with the US Navy. Mm-hmm. And I've also looked at unmanned underwater vehicles recently as well.
Yes, excellent. Actually, in fact, if you're interested in reading a little bit more about Rosie's research, which we'll talk about in a sec, her blog post is called The Unmanned Underwater Future. So, Rosie, what inspired you to write about UUVs? What sparked your interest in them?
I think it was more a lack of knowledge about them. They're not particularly, in very much in comparison to the aerial vehicles, the unmanned aerial vehicles, UUVs are fairly non-existent in sort of when you talk about unmanned platforms in defence. So I was very interested in terms of perhaps why that is, if in fact they're quite big behind the scenes, and what the future might look like for those platforms. So that's what sparked my interest, and also I think just kind of filling the gap.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, as you say in your post, they haven't been widely deployed yet, and there's still a smaller share of research and development. Mm. Where are we at with UUV technology at the moment?
It definitely lags behind the UAVs and the unmanned ground vehicles as well. They're very, very technologically challenging, and I think that's the main reason for the lag. But there's also the fact that over the past decade, the driver of these unmanned platform technologies, the United States, has had more of an operational, incentive to deploy the air vehicles and the ground vehicles in their operations in the Middle East. So I think that now with the pivot, we might be seeing a rise in, I suppose, focus, research and development, and eventually deployment of unmanned underwater vehicles.
Okay, so organisations like DARPA obviously are leading the way. Can you talk a little bit about what platforms they've developed thus far? Like what have they actually got out there right now?
So basically, as far as I'm aware, they've got three programs at the moment that are based on an unmanned underwater vehicle type role, although a couple of those, I suppose you might not call them vehicles. So for instance, with they've got one that they've called an upward falling payload, which I don't mention in the post, but which is basically the idea is to have these containers that hold payloads within them that lie dormant at the sea floor, and they can do that for years on end potentially, and then the Navy or whoever's in charge can basically reawaken them as needed. So I guess it's a force multiplication, power projection sort of capability, at a fairly cheap cost. That's what they're going for there. They've also got the Hydra program, which is the idea to have a rapidly deployable container that holds a host of payloads within it that it can be taken into an area, and basically they think they'll be able to deploy it by ship, submarine or aircraft and then kind of leave it there, and these unmanned underwater vehicles within that that will deploy off that container will be able to carry out mine countermeasures and intelligence, surveillance and reconnaissance. And finally, they've also got a big unmanned underwater vehicle in under research, which is the anti-submarine warfare continuous trail vessel, which called ACTIV, that's the basic the acronym for that.
Just to interrupt for a second, this is still DARPA research.
Is all DARPA.
All DARPA, good, just to reinforce
that. So these are really futuristic type stuff. And this one will sort of track the really quiet diesel electric submarines that have been a big problem for ASW recently. And it will just track them for potentially months and over huge ranges and, sort of give that persistence, that range and that endurance that we want out of unmanned platforms.
Okay, great. So, I mean, with all these developments in, you know, in the pipeline, what is this sort of really meaning for the United States military, for instance?
So I think that the unmanned underwater stuff is trying to, in a similar way to the air and ground systems, respond to an operational need where they need those dirty, what they call the dirty, dull and dangerous jobs to be increasingly carried out by unmanned technology. So, for instance, the stuff that needs consistent and persistent surveillance. So the ISR, the underwater ISR that we really, really need to advance. As well as the more, I suppose, dangerous jobs like the mine countermeasures, you know, not putting a land platform in harm's way. So it's about, I think, the basic incentive is to really lower risk and to force the force multiplication is also a big incentive.
Okay, so I mean, obviously, looking at that as the imperative for the United States, I mean, will that technology come to Australia? I mean, where's the ADF at, the Australian Defence Force, that is? Where are they at in terms of developing their own UUV capability?
We currently do have what we call a remotely operated vehicle for mine countermeasures, I think, that operates off our mine hunter vessels. And so that's attached by a cord, so it's not, in a sense, entirely detached from the surface vessel. I think we're also looking at continuing down that path, perhaps with a more advanced model that will go off our new mine hunter vessels that will be part of C-1180.
Just for our listeners, the C-1180 is the project name for the capability project. That's SEA-1180, if you're interested in looking that up.
Thanks.
And it's just, at the moment, concerned with developing the patrol boat, mine countermeasures, hydrographic and oceanographic forces.
Yes.
So, sorry, just for our listeners.
Yeah, thank you, because I can never remember that exact.
It's all good.
So Australia is definitely, I think it's something we need to be looking into, and I think we are, and I think we should keeping our eye on it, because it's an interesting area. And of course, our Navy is very important to us, and these systems could have a pretty big impact in the future. So it's something we want to be prepared for, and I think we want to be open to as well. We don't want to, you know, stand off too far. We need to be kind of ready to embrace these new technologies.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, Rosie raises a really important point. I mean, for some of our listeners listening internationally, in Australia, a lot of our service chiefs really impress upon us the importance of securing our maritime environment. Mm. You know, we're an island nation, and of course, we are thinking a lot of the time about securing our economic prosperity and our security by making sure those trade routes are, you know, free and secure, mm-hmm. and that, you know, we can participate and be part of that. So we have a great emphasis, you know, thinking about ourselves as a maritime,
yes.
as a maritime nation.
Yes.
So certainly anything that strengthens our Navy in that regard, or things that we can do to sort of, you know, increase security in the region is key.
Mm.
How far off do you think it is for Australia to get a UUV capability? I know that's a bit of a guess.
Yeah, well, it depends how you define it, of course. I mean, we're kind of already there in some ways, but
mm-hmm.
I think that with the Force 2030, we'll have a UUV for mine countermeasures. I think that will be part of it. I think that in terms of, I mean, UUVs, as we might imagine them, with the similar sort of level of capabilities as perhaps UAVs, they're a while off. They've got a pretty big lag technologically. So, I mean, it's going to be a while until Australia has kind of a range of UUVs ready for deployment into different areas. I can't give it an exact time frame,
sure.
but
that's where we're heading, in other words.
Yeah, we're heading there, yeah. And I think it'll really depend on what comes out of the US in the future as well. Yep.
All right, look, I'm just gonna change tack for a second. I'm gonna just turn back to the submarine conference that we had over the last 2 days. Obviously, mm-hmm. Rosie and I were there. You know, supporting the conference, and several of our senior staff were giving presentations, one of whom, Andrew Davies, is former exec editor of The Strategist, is a senior analyst for military capability. He talked a little bit about trends in submarine and anti-submarine warfare.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone's interested, Andrew's also written a post about Moore's Law, about the increases in processing power and the implications of that for submarines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wonder, Rosie, if you can just sort of raise a couple of the main points that Andrew talked about. What does this really mean for how we're going to conduct submarines and submarine operations in future?
Well, in terms of the unmanned underwater stuff, so Andrew touched on the impacts of where it looks like unmanned underwater technologies might be going and their impact on how particularly anti-submarine warfare will work, and he raised the point that there's technologies out there that could create pretty impressive barriers to manned submarines penetrating certain choke points, because they will be able to detect them ideally quite well and pretty persistently. So that raises some pretty big questions when we talk about developing a new manned submarine capability that is going to take us into the future quite a fair distance. So in my post, I also talk about how unmanned underwater vehicles might be complementary elements to the way that we operate our manned submarines. So that's also the case. So it's kind of a case of it being potentially a disruptive and a complementary element to the manned platforms, which is something that's going to be tricky to navigate, I think, because they could equally really make the way that we operate manned submarines very challenging. But at the same time, with the oceanographic research data that they can collect, they could enhance the way that we operate the manned submarines. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting. Excellent. All right, I think we'll wrap up the UUV talk there. Thanks very much, Rosie. We're just going to move to another segment now.
Do you enjoy Sea Control? We certainly hope you do. The Center for International Maritime Security is dedicated to bringing you the unique insights and perspectives that you've come to expect and bring you back every week to our Sea Control podcast, the Next War blog, and our regular meetups. Becoming a member is easy. Go to www.cimsec.org/about/membership to get our articles via email and receive a WordPress account that allows you to submit your own material. We're here to expand the dialogue, so don't be shy about submitting your own podcast topics or blog articles. Don't forget to support the podcast by leaving a comment, a 5-star rating, and tell all of your friends. We appreciate it. And now, back on with the show.
We're here with Dr. Mark Thompson, who's our Senior Analyst for Defense Economics. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
My pleasure.
And now we'll just be talking a little bit about a blog post that Mark and Andrew had published on The Strategist. The Defense Minister, Senator David Johnston, Australian Defense Minister that is, gave a presentation at our submarine conference in which he announced, importantly, that the government would be revisiting the number of submarines it intended to build in Australia. Thus far, we've had this magical number of 12 submarines. No one's quite sure where that formulation came from, but that's been a policy for quite a while. Now there's a bit of reporting around the fact that the government is going to revisit that, but some of our analysts are not so sure that that's actually the case. So the blog post that Andrew and Mark wrote yesterday looks at that particular announcement. I'll head over to Mark to talk a bit more about that.
I guess the point of our blog post was that there appears to be a bit of confusion or a bit of lack of coordination. On the one hand, we've had the Minister say that the focus of the submarine program will be delivering capability. So rather than looking at a particular number of submarines, they'll look at performing a military task and then determine from some analysis the number of submarines necessary to do that. On the other hand, however, looking at some of the presentations from the submarine conference, it was clear that a lot of the planning was centred around 12 submarines. Now you might think, why does the number matter? Well, from an industrial perspective, the number can be very important, because if you have a sufficient number of submarines, you can begin to look at having a continuous build program. So rather than run a project of finite length, you begin a factory delivers submarines at a certain time interval, and you simply do that forever, updating the design as you go forward. But you've got to have enough submarines to make that a viable option.
Right. So at the moment, I mean, does it look like it will be 12, or is that too hard to say?
Well, to be honest, I don't think 12 is enough to do a continuous build program.
Right.
I think the people who want to do that are overly optimistic about the business case that can be built around 12. It's probably, you know, probably in the ballpark, but not quite there.
Sure.
But if we're going to go back to 9 or 8 or 6 submarines, there's no question.
No
continuous
point.
Build program can't be sustained with that fewer number of submarines.
Right. So just to, you know, give our listeners a little bit of an idea of what was discussed at the conference yesterday, I mean, one of the options is obviously to build submarines in Australia from a design that we've taken from abroad. Or another option is, of course, to get a military off-the-shelf, a commercial off-the-shelf design and or capability. What's the likelihood of that, or if you can talk a little bit to that?
Well, the government has the previous government and so far this government have been pursuing two options. One option is to evolve the existing Commons design, and the other option is to begin with an ab initio new design. The previous government discounted the possibility of an off-the-shelf or a modified off-the-shelf solution. They didn't cancel those options entirely. They just put them to the side for the moment to concentrate on the two more ambitious and the two more expensive options.
Mm.
I think for the moment that's where this government will go, but they haven't got the price tag yet. And when you get the price tag, we may find ourselves in a situation where they go back and consider lesser capability options in order to achieve an affordability goal.
So let's just say that the government wanted to push ahead with this idea of 12 evolved design Collins-class submarines. What's the estimate that you and Dr. Davies have put forward for what that might cost, so the government knows what it's facing?
Well, credit where credit's due. Mm-hmm. Dr. Davies has done the estimate.
Oh, sure.
The one you'd have to ask him about, the evolved Collins, his estimate for an ab initio new design was a bit over $30 billion. One of the interesting developments at the conference yesterday was that the representative from Germany, from TKMS, who very, very experienced submarine builder with more than 100 boats built over the last 60 years, sold internationally, said that given their experience, given their existing investment in submarine design and submarine technology, they thought they could meet our requirements for around $20 billion, which...
That's significantly less.
Absolutely, and I think it highlights very clearly the advantages you get by leveraging from the experience and intellectual property of an existing experienced submarine designer.
I see. So at this point in time, the Australian government is still considering what its options are, and we'll find out, I suppose, with the next white paper.
Well, I think the next white paper will give us a lot more clarity, but I think it's worth noting that this is a new government. They gained power in September. They've had a rich agenda focused on the budget and getting the economy back into a stronger position. I honestly don't think they've grappled with this issue yet. And I think in part, to the extent that there was some disconnect in the messaging regarding the number of submarines and a continuous build and an enduring submarine capability, I think that reflects the fact that they are quite reasonably still getting across the brief, still grappling with the issues. Meanwhile, the department is doing its best to proceed on the last advice that was given.
Sure. Well, obviously, our conference that we held over the last 2 days was an international conference, and we had a lot of colleagues with a lot of international speakers come and tell us about their experiences and their perspectives. For the purposes of our SimSec listeners, are there a couple of points that you can impart, a couple of takeaways about the Australian submarine experience that you'd like to share with them?
I think the first point is this is a really difficult problem for Australia. It's a very expensive investment that we're looking at making. In terms of the level of capability we get, that's something that we have to think about long and hard, because both our security and the affordability of the program will hinge upon that. The reality is that we've left this late. We're scrambling to pull together a submarine program. We should have been having the conversation we're having now and looking at the things we're looking at now 5 years ago. So...
with the last white paper, the 2009 white paper?
2009 white paper. We should have been doing the sort of project development that we're doing now back in 2009.
Right.
Unfortunately, that hasn't occurred. We've left things late. We're now going to have to extend the life of type of the Collins. Fortunately, that's looking to be a feasible proposition. But even so, the pace at which we're now going to have to move to put in train the design and subsequent build activities to deliver the future submarine, it's occurring at a pace which is more compressed than is optimal.
Right. Excellent. All right, well, that's Dr. Mark Thompson, Senior Analyst for Defence Economics at the Australian Strategic Policy Institute, giving his perspectives on Australian submarine defence industry and the kinds of challenges that our country will face in order to acquire submarine capability.
And that brings us to a close of our Asia Pacific segment of Sea Control, SimSec's podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. Again, if you're interested in reading a little bit more about our work, we're on ASPE Strategist, www.aspestrategist.org.au. Our work is also featured on SimSec's very awesome blog, Next War. Feel free to get in touch with us if you'd like to talk more about Asia Pacific security and Australia's place within that. And we look forward to joining you for our next podcast. Have a good night.